joyous reunions on the docks in San Diego today as sailors from two U.S. warships returned from the Persian Gulf. The USS Shiloh and the USS Mobile Bay are Navy cruisers that fired Tomahawk missiles into Iraq in the war's early days.
Dominic Fuentes of San Francisco was on the docks in San Diego today with 20 other family members welcoming home his 21-year-old nephew.
From what I can gather, everyone is coming home with a hero's welcome, which is really, really nice because it's been a tough time and they've been put in a tough position. We're all just ready for them to be home.
It could be some time before many other servicemen and women get to see their families. 135,000 American troops are still in Iraq, and today at the Pentagon, Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld would not say how many will remain or for how long.
Over time, do we want to see the number of U.S. forces decline? You bet. Are we perfectly willing to put in any number of U.S. forces that are necessary to provide the kind of security in that country? You bet we do, and we will. We'll put in what we need to.
Earlier this week, Rumsfeld made headlines with an angry denial that the U.S. was seeking permanent military bases in Iraq. He said it was premature to make any such decision. In fact, Rumsfeld said the Pentagon is reassessing its entire so-called footprint, the places it keeps military bases, and not just in the Middle East, but around the globe. Analysts say the end of the Cold War triggered the rethinking, and now the global war on terror is prompting dramatic changes in the U.S. military presence overseas. NPR's Jennifer Ludden reports.
During the recent war in Iraq, the U.S. took over 4 air bases there. Before that, during the campaign in Afghanistan, the U.S. military expanded its presence into Eastern Europe and former Soviet states, something unimaginable just a few years ago, says retired Marine Colonel Bob Work.
If you take a look right now at the number of bases or access that we have in Central Asia, in the stands, like Uzbekistan, and it's just astounding to see us there, you know, in the place of the old Soviet empire. But those bases allow us to get to places very quickly.
Colonel Work says the idea is to keep U.S. forces light, lean, and mobile. New bases are often not much more than an airstrip. Top commanders call them lily pads.
Where American forces hop from lily pad to lily pad, and the lily pads are these forward bases and forward operating locations.
In this way, forces can react fast to a terror attack anywhere in the world. But when the New York Times quoted unnamed administration officials saying that the U.S. planned to keep permanent bases in Iraq, Defense Secretary Rumsfeld exploded. Reading from the article, he denied its very premise.
And project American influence into the heart of the unsettled region. I mean, not so. Not so. And I would say enormously unhelpful.
Peter Singer of the Brookings Institution agrees it's too early to know how long the U.S. military will be in Iraq, but he says the expanding military presence there and elsewhere gives the U.S. undeniable influence.
And it gives us an ability to, in a sense, reach into any region within the world and into any country. It means that we're almost omnipresent.
Singer notes the U.S. military now virtually surrounds Iran and Syria and has a string of bases near China's western border, in addition to those on China's east in South Korea and Japan. Singer predicts a profound impact on U.S. relations with these and other nations.
It completely changes the dynamic towards potential adversaries and also the agendas that they have within their countries. As a lot of people have said relative to Syria, for example, you have a much different discussion with Syria about political reform and their support for terrorist groups when you have U.S. military bases surrounding them.
The paradox is that while the U.S. military is in more countries than ever, it is often less welcome than ever. In part, analyst Work says without a Soviet threat, some countries have less motivation to tolerate a U.S. presence. Other analysts describe resentment and fear of America's increasing power reflected in a surge of anti-Americanism. While many Cold War bases were near cities, Peter Singer says newer ones are usually in remote areas, and military assigned there may be restricted to the base, as in Saudi Arabia.
And that leads into the issue of trying to have it appear not as permanent basing, but a operational basing, so they can at least keep up the appearance to their own community that, no, the Americans are not here forever. They're just here during this needed emergency.
Smaller bases save money and present less of a potential target for terrorists. For military staff assigned to them, they also mean enormous cultural changes. No more rambling compounds with movie theaters and bowling alleys. In fact, spouses and children often stay stateside now while troops put in a year or so of duty in a barren outpost. Kurt Campbell of the Center for Strategic and International Studies says this poses staffing and family issues, and he says there are strategic problems.
I think the reality is that some of our goals are contradictory.
Campbell worries that rearranging U.S. forces overseas could backfire. Just as it's opening new bases, the U.S. is also debating whether to downsize bases in places like South Korea and Germany. Campbell says this could set off alarm bells among longtime allies.
If they were concerned about maybe this somehow signified a U.S. change or diminution in commitment, right, then, you know, they might take steps to bolster their defense spending or capabilities that could trigger many countries doing it simultaneously, which could actually undermine stability globally.
By all accounts, the evolving U.S. military footprint is still being debated within the administration and with allies. Whatever final shape it takes, many analysts say it's already positioning the U.S. as a modern-day military empire. Jennifer Ludden, NPR News, Washington.